And so as we prepare those bowls, moving into those, it's going to be really critical. And so when I think about, right, so starting with our yearling bowls, if we're buying bowls, bowl sale season, it's popping up all over, right? My Facebook, I'm getting ads, emails, I'm getting ads. You know, every day there's a bowl sale right now. What are those gains that those bowls have been on? What's that diet that they've currently been on? Do those producers transition, or do they have any recommendations on transitioning those bulls to be able to come home to you? Have they passed a breeding soundness exam? Right. So when we think about our yearlings, some of these guys are just hitting puberty within those first few months, right, coming into a bull sale season. And so making sure that they are pubertal and then they've passed that breeding soundness exam is going to be key.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Give your cattle platinum protection with Virbac Bovagen Platinum Vaccines. Start your protection at us.virbac.com/platinum protection. Data shows most cattle don't get enough vitamin D, which can impact health and performance. High D from DSM Firmenich can help improve cattle's vitamin D status. Be proactive with Cattle Active. Visit proearthanimalhealth.com today. Lalamond Animal Nutrition offers microbial solutions to boost animal welfare and performance.
Welcome to the Beef Podcast. I'm Travis Molnix, and today I'm lucky to have Dr. Casey McCarthy with me. Dr. McCarthy is the cow-calf specialist at University of Nebraska in Lincoln. Welcome to the show, Casey.
Well, thanks for having me, Travis. I'm glad it worked out to chat today.
I've known Casey for a long time, I guess since she's been a grad student. So a few years now.
Yeah, just a few.
So Casey has been in the cow-calf specialist role at UNL for going on about 5 years now.
Yeah, started January of 2020.
Her feet are not wet as it used to be. So she's got a little more experience under her belt and does a lot of cool stuff, especially on the bull management end. And so that's what we're going to talk about today is sometimes a area that we kind of mismanage and we forget about and we don't put a lot of emphasis in like we do the cow herd, as we do is managing bulls over the winter, getting them ready for the breeding season, etc. So Casey, to start us off, just to give everyone the background of who Casey McCarthy is and your role, kind of give that overview.
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in Northern California, played sports in high school, volleyball, basketball, softball. I did travel softball and was heavily involved with that, but then also did 4-H. And so, developed my own cow herd, showed steers and every other species under the sun, and really enjoyed just the ag lifestyle, beef production, and really wanted to learn more. And so softball was my avenue to do that. So I went to Chico State for a couple years and then transferred to Colorado State. And so I pitched at Colorado and did animal science, worked with some extension folks out there, and really wanted to know how I could do their job and how I could be that person to connect with beef producers and with students. And so that kind of took me on my route with softball to New Mexico State, and that's where I met Travis. And so I was helping the softball team down there for a couple of years, did a master's in ruminant nutrition. I actually did my research for my master's with Holstein steers. And so we did steers and fed them out, did some implants, and really loved the work and just diving into the literature on that, but really wanted to get back to that cow-calf side. So I went to North Dakota State and worked with Carl Dahlin up there, did a lot of supplementation work with minerals and energy protein supplementation out on pasture. And so that was kind of my main study, but then we also started diving into some bull development questions that we were getting up there. So that was really kind of where we started stemming a lot of those questions. I was teaching, I was doing some extension work with Carl up there in North Dakota. And so I really kind of found this avenue of interest with bull and heifer development kind of side of things. And so that's what brought me down here to a teaching and extension role at UNL. And so I've been here since 2020, like I said earlier. And my husband actually works at the U.S. Meat Animal Research Center. And so I get to collaborate with him quite a bit, which has worked out really well in my role on being able to take a lot of producer questions and really work with that group and resource out there. Since they have a large cattle inventory, it's been really great to be able to connect some of these questions from the industry, especially on some bull development. So that's where one of our most recent studies on yearling bull development has kind of come to fruition out there. We did a 3-year study looking at yearling bull development. So we were looking at rates of gain that bulls that we were seeing from bull tests across like the country, right? What are bulls doing, right? They're getting doing feed efficiency tests. They're gaining upwards of 4 pounds a day. And my question was, you know, what happens from a longevity standpoint and semen characteristics? You know, can it be detrimental if we're pushing these bulls too much? And then how do I help my producers on the back end when they're buying bulls from bull sales? How do we manage those guys moving into the breeding season? And so we just wrapped up year 3 of this study. So we basically took bulls on 2 rates of gain, 2.5 pounds, which is kind of more of a moderate rate of gain that you're seeing with some folks, and then kind of pushing towards that 4 pound a day. And so same diet, we're just limit feeding, right, to get those gains and making sure energy is matched for each of those. And then we're testing those bulls a few times in terms of semen evaluation. And so we're using a computer assisted, CASA analysis system. And then we're looking at semen characteristics. And then we turn some bulls out for 30 days. And then we let them go out and breed. And then we bring them back in. We let them recover for a couple weeks. And then we reevaluate that semen. What we're seeing when we're sending bulls out at, say, a body condition score 6 for our moderates, and then we move to our kind of higher rates of gain, right, 4+ pounds a day, they're looking at more a 7, 7.5 body condition. Those heavier guys are losing upwards of 10 to 15% of their body weight in a 30-day breeding season. And what we're seeing with those guys then is when we bring them back in to evaluate semen, we're seeing total concentrations, total progressive motility decreased in those bulls that have been losing quite a bit of weight, that were on that higher trajectory of weight. And so then it starts to ask all these questions. Well, we know bulls are losing weight. They're working hard. How do we manage for that? And so those were some of those questions that, I'm starting to ask and having conversations with our producers is, how do we manage them? How have they been managed before they come to your operation? And then how do we make sure that we recover any of that body weight loss in a timely manner, right, moving to that next breeding season? So those are some just kind of a short synopsis of what we're kind of starting to see, and starting to see kind of those questions as we move forward to just manage our bulls in general and not just our yearling bulls.
So, you know, we're sitting here in the 1st of March, and it's a very hot time for a bull. Sales are popping off everywhere. Right. So very busy time for seed stock operators selling bulls, but also cow-calf guys are buying bulls. And so you touched on something that's very important. That historically, you know, you go to the sales and bulls are over-conditioned because of looks, of wanting these bulls to really look good and not necessarily were managed to actually go out and work, but they're managed to look good. right? Because they're trying to sell out of that ring or video auction of something that looks good. And so, but when you turn those bulls out, bring them back home to the ranch, turn those out, and then they start losing, you know, you said, you know, 10 to 15%, you know, you've got bulls losing 200 to 400 pounds during the breeding season. And so, you know, you go to these environments that you got big pastures. You've got, you know, the bulls are traveling, you know, 10, 15 miles per day. And that's got to have a big negative consequence, like you say, on semen quality during that breeding season.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you think about, so my example, right, that 10 to 15% was with our yearling bulls. And like you said, we can have mature bulls, right, who have a few breeding seasons under their belt. They are still losing weight during a breeding season. And even if they're in a moderate body condition 5 or 6 moving into a breeding season, they're still going to be losing weight because they've got to travel. They've got X number of females that they're trying to cover during a breeding season. And depending on, right, topography and forage resources during the breeding season, those can all also have impacts, right, throughout their breeding season and their time that they're with the cows. And so as we prepare those bulls moving into those, it's going to be really critical. And so when I think about, right, so starting with our yearling bulls, if we're buying bulls, bull sale season, it's popping up all over, right? My Facebook, I'm getting ads, emails, I'm getting ads. You know, every day there's a bull sale right now. What are those gains that those bulls have been on? What's that diet that they've currently been on? Do those producers transition, or do they have any recommendations on transitioning those bulls to be able to come home to you? Have they passed a breeding soundness exam? Right. So when we think about our yearlings, some of these guys are just hitting puberty within those first few months, right, coming into a bull sale season. And so making sure that they are pubertal and then they've passed that breeding soundness exam is going to be key. And if you don't have that information, I would strongly encourage folks to consider getting breeding soundness exams done prior to the breeding season, just so you've got some time to make adjustments. So those are a couple things to think about. When we think about moving into that breeding season, right, stocking appropriately is going to be key, I think, for especially our yearlings versus our mature bulls. So when we think about, right, a general recommendation for our mature bulls, that's usually anywhere from 25 cows to a bull, maybe a little more, maybe a little less, right, depending on if you're synchronizing or using any type of kind of estrus or, you know, AI protocols, that can change. But our yearling bulls are going to be stocked potentially a little less, just depending on pasture size and number of females you're trying to cover. And so, you know, anywhere from 16 to 20 is usually kind of that recommendation. But you can push those guys a little bit, but do know, right, that they're still trying to figure stuff out. And so they're going to have more mounts. They're going to be using a lot more energy. They're going to be covering a lot of ground because they're going to be trying to cover everything under the sun. Compared to your mature bulls that know how to get the job done, they're going to go out, they're going to cover females they need, and then they're just going to kind of, right, sit back, relax, and then cover any other females they need. You know, so that behavior is totally different when you watch those guys out in a pasture. So keeping those things in mind as we purchase bulls or move bulls through, I think those are all some key points that I generally am always talking with folks about.
I think one thing to highlight, and you just discussed this study you did at Clay Center, but, you know, you talk about distance walk and topography, and that plays a big role in that. And in this study with those yearling bulls, Clay Center is a flat terrain, right? You know, so we don't have terrain issues there. And due to some of their stocking rates, et cetera, we're talking smaller pastures. And you're seeing this large of a difference in small pastures. Bulls are not traveling very far. It's a flat terrain. It's easy terrain. And they're still seeing this decrease in volume, concentration, quality by 30 days.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And so when you think about how long a majority of our breeding seasons are for most operations, right, they're pushing 60, 75, maybe 90 days. Those are some of the numbers that I've gotten in lately, looking at some numbers and some kind of benchmark performance data with just preg rates. And so knowing that we've got longer breeding seasons than my example with this study out of US Mark, do you have the bull power to maybe switch bulls up, give some younger bulls some more time to mature, to be able to maybe switch them out? Maybe that's some different strategies with young versus older bulls. Maybe that's consolidating, right, and using EstraSync. So we're making them work fairly concentrated early on in the breeding season. But we know that a lot's going to happen then, and then we can kind of give them some time to recover later on in the breeding season. But considering how we're managing them and moving forward into the next few breeding seasons is going to be really key on this first one. And so, yeah, these bulls aren't traveling very long. We've got some GPS collars on them, so excited to see where that eventually might take us in terms of some of that analysis. We also have some parentage data that's going to be coming in. And so really seeing, right, which bulls were siring calves, right, in those pastures. And so we were stocking, right, 250 females. And we, you know, we were talking about 20 to 25 yearling bulls out in those pastures. But it's very consolidated, right, smaller pasture sizes than some of these more extensive systems. And so we're still seeing a lot of variability, and we're seeing, right, some dominance with some bulls, but you do see kind of that distribution across bulls. So really excited about that data, but gets you thinking about next steps and how we need to be evaluating it, making sure you kind of understand at least the semen side of things for where bulls are at, so you can then kind of account for, right, maybe a bull that's got a higher concentration, right, versus somebody that maybe is a little lower. So he's going to maybe need a lot more to cover, right, for females. So that management there, and then really just evaluating those diets and those gains that those bulls are on. I mean, even with our mature bulls, right, those guys, like we, you know, Travis mentioned in the beginning, you know, sometimes we forget about them. We send them out to their bull pasture, right? Or maybe they're out on, you know, corn residue, just kind of by themselves, and we go check them occasionally. But things to think about with, you know, we've had some extreme weather cases over the last few weeks out here, right? So you have that potential for frostbite and other kind of damage with wind and cold in some areas, especially maybe more in the Midwest and in Northern Plains. And so we've had bulls come in on study that, you know, we've got them bedded down and we have opportunities for them to get out of the weather. And we still see, you know, frostbite damage to the testes, which is then reflected in those semen analyses. And so giving them time to recover. And so that's why I also strongly encourage just folks to take that little bit of time to invest in a breeding soundness exam, because when you start to think about, right, that return in terms of number of calves on, you know, exposed and females exposed and calves on the ground, and with where, you know, weaned calf prices are right now, the, you know, more opportunity for more calves on the ground is going to be, I think, really valuable when you start to kind of put that benefit to cost ratio together, with that, you know, $65 to $100+, right, breeding soundness exam fee, right, depending on location and places, that's gonna, you know, vary with the exam and labor and those types of things, but that can start to add up. But it's a great insurance policy for folks that, you know, we usually like to talk to people about and just keep it on their radar. You've got a little bit of time you know, before we hit, you know, the stronger May calving breeding season. So something for us to think about.
So, you know, we think, you know, after that insult occurs, whether it's frostbite or just a weather event, right? So roughly 60 days after that, you start producing new sperm. So for these producers, what do you recommend of how do you manage that after these weather events?
Yeah. So, right. So when you think about damage to the scrotum, that ultimately is going to be impacting fertility. So we see a higher incidence of bulls not passing a breeding soundness exam when they've got moderate to severe frostbite damage. And so like Travis said, spermatogenesis or this production of sperm takes about 60, 61 days. So depending on when that insult is, right, we need them to recover. And so most typically what we're going to recommend is give them a few weeks and then retest to see if we don't have any lingering damage, you know, in terms of fertility. And so that's why, right, now is a great time to kind of start thinking about getting those bulls in, especially if, you know, we're thinking of maybe June, July breeding seasons. You've got a little bit of time for them to recover. And then, you know, March, April, May, right, if we need to retest, we've got enough time, right, within that 60 days to get a couple weeks and then maybe retest. And consulting with your veterinarian as well, I think, is important here with that relationship to get a really good idea of where those bulls are at when they're evaluating that semen, right, and then helping kind of make that recommendation. But we've got some vets that we work with that are also some beef educators and livestock educators here in the state and making those same kind of recommendations.
Yeah, definitely is a challenge for a lot of producers of how do you manage that time? You know, it's an added cost. It's added time of bringing those bulls in, dealing with the bulls themselves, having the facilities to deal with bulls. But if you think about if you had a bull, mature bull, if he didn't pass and you turn him out, if he's a dominant bull, what does he do to your preg rates?
Crash. Yep. Yeah, those preg rates tank if you've got some of those scenarios where you've got a dominant bull who's covering a majority of your females and your preg rates and those types of things start to decrease and we really can start to get into really bad situations when we don't know, you know, what those bulls are doing.
And so we've always recommended to producers, because even just managing bulls over the winter can be tough. Where do you put them, right? And it's extra labor, extra cost. So, and we've always recommended if you have bred cows, mature cows, just run your bulls with your bred cows, right? And so if you run your bulls with bred cows over winter, then it's much easier. They're actually calm. They don't fight. They get along. And they stay in better condition because you're managing your cows, right?
And, you know, and something, you know, to that point as well, when you start to think about, right, implementing pregnancy detection and those types of things where you're confirming those pregnancies, then we're not extending calving or breeding seasons, right? When we're keeping those bulls out there, you've got a window of time where, you know, you've got that break. And so, yeah, to keep bulls out there, it's one less pasture that you've got to worry about. You know, you're seeing those guys every day, right? When you're checking cows or every other day, depending on kind of where they're at, you've got a better idea of how those bulls are doing over winter. You know, if they're losing weight or maintaining condition, then you can manage them a little differently just based on where they're at, if that's separated or together with the herd. And I think you can really find some value when you do have some eyes on them and you're just not forgetting about them in their pasture.
Yeah, so any recommendations since, and to just wrap us up, that anything we didn't talk about, any recommendations you have for cow-calf producers looking to buy bulls, manage bulls?
Yeah. So I think, you know, evaluate your bulls, you know, so that's taking that physical exam, encouraging a breeding soundness exam as well, evaluating body condition. And I think that's body condition prior to breeding, during the breeding season, and then having a plan for how you're going to gain that weight back on those guys and then maintain that body weight as well, I think is really key. And so really evaluating those bulls at different segments throughout the year, I think will really improve, right, that longevity with those bulls within your herd. And then, you know, these guys are athletes. So making sure that they're prepared, right, for that busy breeding season, I think is really critical as we are developing these bulls, as we're maintaining these bulls in the long run for our operations. These guys got to be able to get out and work.
It's time for our famous three.
Everyone knows vitamin D affects bone formation, immunity, and growth. What everyone doesn't know is research shows cattle don't get enough vitamin D. High D from DSM Firmenich optimizes health and growth with a more bioavailable form of vitamin D. And data shows high D fed heifers weighed over 8 pounds more at weaning. Don't let your cattle be vitamin deficient. Meet the growing needs of your herd year-round with high D. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/hy-d.
So, Casey, to wrap us up, we've got three questions here. And the first one is, what is your highly recommended beef resource? It could be book, website, personnel.
Oh, well, I could put a shameless plug in. I do reference our extension, beef.unl.edu resource quite a bit. And I would also say, since I do tend to like the repro and nutrition interactions, I do use the beef repro task force information quite a bit as well. Or I guess maybe I have like three options. Or my really good friend is also a beef specialist in Wyoming. So her and I are pretty good about resources and collaborating, and we ask each other questions all the time. So those would probably be my like three top resources. Yeah.
Yeah, the extension definitely is a tremendous resource for producers in whatever state you are in.
Yeah, and you know, and being able to pull the research back in for folks, and I think that's right. The greatest opportunity for extension is just to be able to translate that and be a resource. So that's where I send folks.
So what is a non-ag book that you highly recommend someone reading?
When I was going through college and sports, we read quite a few of John Gordon's books, and he was a keynote at the coaches convention one year that I attended, and really, really enjoyed a couple of his books. The Energy Bus would probably be one that I encourage folks to think about. They're short. He's got great storytelling. And really powerful messages. And I think for right any group, I think you can get a lot from that.
Lastly, what sets apart a successful beef professional from someone that isn't?
I think it's your network. I think the people that you know and those opportunities that present themselves and being willing to try new things, I think really opens people up to a number of doors, collaborations, and relationships that I think are really key for professionals to right to grow and develop and be integral to the beef industry and society.
Well, that's a great response. You know, network is so important.
Yeah,
it's not always what you know; it's who you know, right?
Yep.
So network is big, and the willingness to change and not be set in our, you know, the roots in life of we always did it like this.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's what I preach in class. I think that's the unique thing about my position is I get to connect with college students, We get to talk about, right, beef production and segments within the industry, and really being open to ideas and, you know, expanding that network. And I think as my role, I feel like I can be that connector for students and hopefully kind of open their ideas to and their heads to write to new thinking. And I think that's, you know, the unique way that I've kind of traveled throughout my academic career to where I'm at, and found a lot of value in that. And so instilling those kind of ideas and thoughts, you know, to students and producers, and always excited when, you know, they're open-minded to those new ideas and relationships.
No, it's great. Well, thank you, Casey, for jumping on. I really enjoyed talking about bull management. You know, doing some, you know, great stuff there in Nebraska, and really impactful for, you know, the cow-calf producers and how they're managing these bulls and what they're looking for when they buy bulls to make sure they're fit, ready to go, and how you manage them when you get home.
Yeah, no, thank you, Travis. I appreciate it.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.